This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Thursday, February 7th, 2013. Yesterday, the governor and Democratic lawmakers announced plans to improve the state's child welfare system. The move comes after the deaths of dozens of children linked to human service departments over the last several years. The reforms follow a series of articles published by the Denver Post in November, which found that 72 of the 175 children who have died of abuse and neglect in Colorado in the last 6 years had families or caregivers known to child protection workers before they died. The Post found that in that time, child protection workers in the state did not follow state policy and regulations more than half the time when they tried to protect children who eventually died. Following the series, both the public and lawmakers demanded explanations for those children's deaths and improvements for how a child's case is handled. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
It was about this time last year that Governor Hickenlooper unveiled his plans to make the child welfare system work better. And now he says there's still room for improvement.
How do we do a better job of protecting our children? And I think we have been making progress with our most vulnerable children.
Colorado is different from a lot of other states because each of the state's 64 counties runs its own child welfare program. Reggie Bika heads the Colorado Department of Human Services. He says the state will pump about $20 million into new reforms, including uniform training for caseworkers and a statewide hotline to report abuse.
Children should not have to experience abuse or neglect before we provide them and their families the services that they need. That's why we are investing in services that will assist families before they become a part of the child welfare system.
In many instances, Bika says caseworkers don't have enough legal grounds to move forward with an investigation, but the family still needs help. He says the state will focus on providing aid to families that are struggling to make sure abuse never happens. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
The Aspen Times reports a woman was killed Monday while skiing on Aspen Mountain. On Tuesday, authorities said the woman was hit by another female skier while she was standing on Lower Spar Gulch. According to the Pitkin County Coroner's Office, the 48-year-old woman died from a traumatic brain injury. Her death was ruled accidental. In a statement, the Aspen Skiing Company said Ski Patrol received a report about the collision at 3:46 p.m. Monday and responded immediately. Advanced life-saving procedures were undertaken by the ski patrol, and the woman was transported to an ambulance and taken to Aspen Valley Hospital, where she was later pronounced dead. The other skier suffered minor injuries. Both were wearing helmets. Witnesses to the crash are urged to call the Pitkin County Sheriff's Office at 970-920-5300. A spokesman said preliminary information suggests there was no criminal negligence on the part of the skier who collided with the victim. However, the sheriff's office investigates incidents like Monday's to see if there is a safety issue first and also to see if there was any negligent behavior or violation of the Colorado Skier Safety Act. This was the third snow sports-related death at the Aspen Snowmass ski areas this season. A snowmass ski patroller was killed December 30th when she triggered an avalanche in a permanently closed area within the ski area boundary. And Caleb Moore died January 31st from fatal injuries he suffered 1 week earlier while competing in a snowmobile event at the Winter X Games at Buttermilk. In addition, a skier at Aspen Mountain died after suffering a cardiac event January 21st, and a 37-year-old man died January 13th after he triggered an avalanche in the backcountry outside Marble. The Natural Resources Conservation Service said this week that late January precipitation in Colorado may have salvaged the month, but statewide snowpack budged little from where it was at the year's start. According to the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, the agency said the arrival of a late January storm particularly benefited southwest Colorado. As of the start of this month, the statewide snowpack was 72% of normal versus 70% of average January 1st. At 72%, Colorado snowpack is 90% of where it was at the same time last year, which ended with snowpack well below average. The recent moisture boosted snowpack in the combined San Miguel, Dolores, Animas, and San Juan basins to 88% of normal, up from 70% a month earlier. The Rio Grande and Arkansas basins also saw gains in snowpack. Other basins in the state did not fare so well in January. The South Platte dropped 13% to 54% of normal, the state's lowest. The Colorado Basin was at 60% at the month's start, which is 89% of the same time last year, and the Gunnison started the month at 75% of average. In its release, the NRCS said, quote, "Current stream flow forecasts continue to point towards well below normal runoff values in all the major river basins in Colorado. Adding to this bleak water supply outlook, reservoir storage across the state remains below average. Unless Colorado sees weather patterns that bring above average snowfall and precipitation to the state over these next few months, it is not likely that there will be much relief from the current drought conditions," end quote. Statewide reservoir storage is at 70% of average and 63% of the same time last year. The Colorado Basin storage is at 67% of average and 59% of last year. For the Gunnison, those figures are 72 and 61% respectively. The San Miguel, Dolores, Animas, and San Juan basins are still at just 2/3 of average. Yesterday morning, the Bureau of Land Management announced it has deferred all 20 remaining gas leases in Colorado's North Fork Valley, totaling over 20,000 acres, and exempted them from a February 14th sale. The agency said it deferred the leases as a response to extensive public comment. KVNF's Marty Derlin and I took to the streets to hear what people had to say.
So what do you think about the lease deferment?
Well, I don't know who it is, but someone's obviously looking out for us around here. But really, all the people who got together and made it happen, I'm just blown away. It's incredible. It's great news.
We're all very excited, thrilled. Fingers still crossed.
Real pleased to hear that the BLM is going to do it responsibly. And, so that was pretty exciting news. We're happy. And we're going to continue to give input to the BLM through the citizens, the alternative citizens input as to what we think they should be taking into consideration.
The community really deserves a round of applause. This is the community's victory, the BLM pulling these parcels, and we couldn't be happier that the BLM's finally made the right decision. It's really important to note that these parcels remain on the table, and the community needs to remain vigilant in our efforts to put smart protective management in place for these BLM lands before we even talk about leasing again. This isn't the end of the issue. It's a great day to celebrate, and we're going to enjoy it, but there's a lot of work still ahead.
Well, I am grateful for our community because we are pursuing our interest here and making sure that people know where we are with this, and we're not going to let down, and I like that.
Well, they deferred before. They deferred again. I'm sure they're going to make another attempt, and we'll be ready for them.
Yeah.
We've gotten our way twice. I think we'll get our way the next time.
We just keep it up.
Oh, yay, what a victory. But it's still happening elsewhere, so that's the bigger picture. And I'm hoping we still are going to work toward reform for drilling practices.
Fabulous! It helps to be irritating.
You can fight as many battles as you want over oil and gas. It's going to happen somewhere. And if the impacts are unacceptable here, they're probably unacceptable in someone else's backyard too. And the take home for that for me is like, well, then if it's unacceptable everywhere, then what's the solution? You got to find the root cause of the problem and deal with that. Because what we're dealing with is a symptom of, you know, the amount of energy we use. Because most of this gas is going to America. We're the largest user of natural gas in the world. And we're currently a net importer of natural gas, even with our huge glut. So, I mean, the problem really is us, and we got to deal with that, too.
And I was just very elated. Now, again, it's a deferral. and meeting with the Conservation Center on other projects tomorrow, and we'll bring this up on next steps and see where people want to go. But for now, we're going to enjoy the day.
Local miners at Oxbow Mining's Elk Creek Mine in Somerset should be back to work within a week after being sent home January 9th because of high levels of carbon monoxide in the mine. Mike Ludlow, vice president, said Oxbow Mining's Elk Creek's mines is waiting for concrete to cure on the seals that were built to wall off dangerous areas. More than 200 hourly employees were sidelined during the closure. Ludlow said yesterday the miners will be developing future areas for the longwall when they return to work. Yesterday's Delta County Independent quotes Ludlow as saying, quote, "The longwall is sealed in the mine right now in the inert area. That is not accessible to us, and we won't have longwall production until about mid-year," end quote. And finally this morning, in other Paonia news, the Enfriar-Wazirk Conservation Center is the recipient of a $10,000 grant from the Union Pacific Foundation to support the landscaping of the Paonia River Park. The park, located near the entrance to the town of Paonia, was once an in-stream gravel pit and is currently the only public river access point along the 33-mile-long North Fork of the Gunnison River. It is a popular recreation spot and boasts restored riverbanks, picnic areas, a boat launch, and hiking trails. In a release, the Conservation Center's River Park Committee indicates it plans to use the Union Pacific grant this summer to replace invasive and noxious weeds with xeriscaping, that's low irrigation, low maintenance landscaping, in the most heavily used areas of the park. This concludes this morning's newscast. This is Brian Cambria for KVNF News.